Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking on urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode.
My name is Paul Swinney. I'm Director of Policy Research at the think tank Centre for Cities. We look at the 63 largest urban areas across the UK, but in reality, we actually look at the geography of the whole of the economy. I think not just our largest cities like Greater Manchester, but actually understanding sort of the role that rural areas play in the national economy as well. We're delighted to welcome Andy here today to have an in-conversation session with him. I've got a number of questions that I'd like to run through in terms of your experiences as a mayor within Greater Manchester, dealing with central government and then moving on to Labour's position on mayors and devolution and levelling up, although I'm not certain whether I'll use the terms levelling up, whether it comes or not. Maybe we can explore that today. And then we'll move on to questions from yourselves. So hopefully we'll talk for about half an hour between Andy and myself, and then I'll open up four questions. So please do get your questions to hand. So you've been in post for a number of years now, Andy, in a position that was brand new when it was set up, notwithstanding so the interim position, obviously, if someone was in beforehand. What have you been able to do as a Metro Mayor over those times? What are the things that you're most proud of in terms of the powers that you've had, you've been able to use to bring about change?
Thanks, Paul. What a turnout. Brilliant. Thanks so much, everybody, for coming. Does it look like I'm enjoying this job? Because if it does, it's because I am. I don't know if that comes over at all to you. But I definitely feel liberated, energised by it. And that's in many ways the power of devolution. It's what it can bring, I think, to the table. I want to see other areas getting something of the same. And you can be a doer, not a sayer. And I think politics needs more doers rather than just sayers. You know, you can get out and make change real. And the most significant one we've worked on was homelessness, where we've really, you know, we kind of came into a situation that was a kind of growing crisis, established a homelessness action network. And this is the strength of devolution. It's not just a mayor saying, well, that must be done. You can build from the bottom up and you get, you know, kind of people working together in a different way. You can do politics differently. That's the key thing. I just want to get over to everybody. I'm coming here this week to say to the party, really, get right behind English devolution now. And, you know, it's the way you kind of reconnect people to the political process, in my humble opinion. And, you know, you can just show that from what we've done there. You know, we've got, won't go into all the details, but we have a scheme in Greater Manchester called A Bed Every Night. And it's now operating more single room provision for people. It's an emergency accommodation scheme. But last night in Greater Manchester, 600 people plus were in A Bed Every Night. And the idea for it wasn't mine. It came from a faith leader within the city. And that's different, isn't it? Where you take people's ideas and you can put them quickly into effect and everybody can kind of build the response together. That's just great, really, in terms of enabling people to improve the places where they live. We've got a free bus pass for 16 to 18s, and it was the young people that designed it. You know, they built the whole thing and added the opportunities to it that they wanted to see. So this is kind of what's beginning to happen. And I would say the thing for the skeptics in the room, if you start politics from a place-first approach, that's a better starting point because place is a unifying kind of force, isn't it? Everyone cares about their place, however they vote. And I know in Greater Manchester, you know, people who vote for other political parties have given me their vote at the mayoral election. Therefore, place-first, not party-first, has got to be the kind of thing. But when you start from a place-first approach, it's amazing, actually, how people begin to buy in and everyone kind of starts to work together. And, you know, Greater Manchester's got that anyway. There's a buy-in to the place and what it's all about. And that is the power of devolution. And the more we work at this, the more it will come through and the more dividends it will bring.
Yes, definitely. And I think the role of the convener is a big thing around mayors. I think we do talk a lot about what extra powers do we want, and we'll definitely come on to that. But there's a lot of powers that are there already in terms of, using the force to sort of direct people, almost to use a Star Wars reference. I think one of the things that you're very high profile at a national level, but actually I think using that profile locally in terms of what you've been doing around buses recently and some of the videos that you've been doing, can you tell us a little bit about how you're using your powers to go about change in transport at the local level, because that's a big thing that people use every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got a bit of an intake of breath in the last meeting when I said the cost of a single bus ticket in Greater Manchester. Does everyone know that it's over £4 in parts of Greater Manchester for us? Yeah. I heard somebody go, what? I think, yeah. I mean, I keep coming back and back to this. You know, that inequality is really outrageous. It's £1.55 for a single bus journey in London. And if you only use the buses in a day travelling around London, you won't pay more than £4.65. And it's a much massively better system, massively better than anywhere else in England. And the question I keep saying is, why can't we all have London-level fares? Because if we did, that would be real levelling up, because you connect people to jobs and opportunity and leisure activity. You know, you would give people a better life, actually, if we all had London-level fares. Why is public transport more expensive in the poorest parts of the country? Or, non-existent sometimes in some of the poorest parts of the country. So I'm really on a bit of a mission with this, and I did the video to show people that it's not just the cost. When I did my journey from Middleton to Media City, it's not just the cost of that bus ticket to get to the city centre of Manchester. When I then get on the tram, it doesn't recognise me like the Oyster system, that I'm a person that's made the journey from, and then you pay again. And, and everything has to go into the city and out because the buses try and compete with the tram. So to cut a long story short, I think transport is, if you start with transport, that's the good place to start for levelling up. I have taken the decision to bring buses back under public control. And that is the precursor to build a London-style public transport system. And when the government comes to Manchester next week, I'm going to put on the table a constructive proposal. A levelling up deal that has a London-style public transport system at its heart. Because if we had that same level of fares, honestly, I just think it would change a huge number of lives in our city region.
Yeah, fantastic. And you touched on something there which I think is quite important in terms of the powers that London's been afforded for, at least 20 years and certainly longer in terms of bus franchising in particular. And yet I think we have a lot of discussions at the local and national level about distribution of funding, but we don't really seem to have the same discussions about the unequal nature of distribution of power between London and elsewhere in the country. And clearly, the creation of your position is a move to change that. And yet, I think in your opening remarks as well, there's clearly some reticence within the Labour Party, never mind more generally in terms of other places fighting to have more devolution. Why is it, do you think, that that perhaps places haven't been shouting so loudly about, I think, what is actually an imbalance, if not an injustice, about all those powers that London's been afforded over the last 20 or 30 years that other places haven't?
I think it's work in progress, but I keep saying I want Labour to much more wholeheartedly embrace English devolution, because I think it's got so much, not to offer us just from a party point of view, but for people to close some of the inequalities across the country. I would say in Greater Manchester, we're using devolution to roll back the 1980s. Buses under public control, building council housing for the first time properly in a long time. We're fixing things that Westminster has never fixed. And that, I think, is the thing. But those are policies that people in all places want, I think. So I'm a big, I don't want things to stay as they are and Manchester to have all of the kind of hold on all of this. We do not want to be the London of the North. Therefore, I want to work quite hard for other places to get devolution deals. We all won't have the same at any given time because every place is on a slightly different sort of path. But we all should be working towards a path towards greater devolution. And I think that is absolutely the way to go. And I think what I'm kind of noticing is, well, obviously London, with 20 years as a mayor, has been successful. Things have improved in London. So why wouldn't that work elsewhere? And I keep saying, really, if you back all English cities outside of London with the same funding and the same powers, they will succeed as well. We'll have a more balanced, more productive economy, and the country as a whole will be a happier place than it has been in recent times.
Yeah, but we would in Tenement City certainly wholeheartedly agree with that one. I think it's interesting that there are certainly say we've now got a devolution deal in, or a mayor in place in West Yorkshire, but it took a long time to get there. And then we've got places like Nottingham, which haven't got anything in place at all currently. And it's quite interesting, I think, that we don't see that fight in some of the places to actually, say, well, hang on a minute, why is it firstly that London has got this? And then, why is Greater Manchester got this, but we haven't? And I think there's a push there required from some of those places to close that gap as well.
Yeah, and those places, you can't just blame Westminster for everything. Those places have got to get their act together. And I'm not being unkind when I say that, but it's true, isn't it? And some of the kind of ridiculous parochialism that you see around a place. I mean, that is holding a lot of places back. Greater Manchester has never suffered from that, actually. You know, when the old Greater Manchester Council was abolished by the Thatcher government, the 10 councils didn't just go their separate ways. They said, no, this we've got to keep together. Obviously, they were owners of the airport, and that was a big part of the glue that kept Greater Manchester together. And then they stuck together, persuaded, it was the Labour government actually that created the Greater Manchester Combined Authority. And now that's slowly built into what it is today. And the likes of Sir Richard Lees, Sir Howard Bernstein, Lord Peter Smith, no longer with us. I mean, these were giants, really, in terms, well, they are giants. Peter died recently, sadly, but you know, all three of them and others really built this. They built Greater Manchester to this point where it's now at. And they've given my generation, if you like, an incredible platform to take the city to the next level. And if you, when for those who have the misfortune of going to Conservative conference next week, so I take some of you, you'll have the joy of coming to Manchester, though, so that's balanced up. What, for those who've not been in a while, you'll be surprised, I think, when you look at the skyline of the city. It's looking pretty amazing, actually, and you can see it's growing in stature all the while. If you connect up on the ground beneath those impressive buildings with a London-style public transport system, you can see how this city is slowly becoming, you know, a truly world-class city. Yes. We were named third best city in the world by Time Out recently. Did you all? Yeah.
Only the third.
Sorry for the Londoners in the room. I know we don't aim to be third at anything. Top UK city. I will rephrase it. But the team, though, from Time Out, it's a serious point, said they weren't awarding it on the quality of your restaurants or your hotels. They said they're good, but you know, it's the spirit of the place, it's the innovation, it's the community, it's the solidarity. All the ingredients are there. And actually, the city is really, you know, it's really coming through. And obviously, that's getting more and more recognised, which is great.
Excellent. Well, I will have the pleasure of being in Manchester next week. So I'm very much looking forward to at least seeing the skyline. If maybe not the nature of the debate, that might be
well,
taking place.
Obviously, we're very keen to impress the new Communities Secretary. So we're going to lay on a special, you know, warehouse project, Hacienda night. For, we're trying our best to, roll out the best, the best that Manchester can offer. Yeah, 24-hour party people.
He's,
you know,
he's experienced the rest, now try the best.
That's, exactly.
That's the message.
Aberdeen's good, but, you know.
You touched a bit on parochialism there as well. Obviously, there's been, certainly in sort of thinking about the divides across the country, there's been a lot of debate about which has pitched cities versus towns in recent years, which I don't think is especially helpful and is probably infused within the levelling up debate as well. And what's your take on that?
It's a bit of a problem for your organisation, isn't it, in that people kind of criticise you for being, you know, only about cities. And I've heard you push back on that, Paul and Andrew, and rightly, because let's not be, we keep being divided, don't we? You're either this or you're that. You know, when did life become like that? Is it social media that makes it like that? I don't know. You know, you've got to be black or white, this or that. You've got to be both, surely. And you've got to prove that both can prosper together is surely the thing, isn't it? So the best example I can give to you all of that is what's happening in Stockport. Stockport has the first mayoral development corporation in the country that's focused on a town. You know, often these vehicles are used for sort of former industrial sites very successfully. We're the first to take a mayoral development corporation to a town. And if you picture Stockport, for those of you who know it, underneath those famous railway arches in the middle, there is an amazing plan emerging, led by Lord Kerslake, which tells you something about how interesting he sees it, for 3,500 homes in town centre Stockport, replacing sort of old retail or employment space. We're rebuilding Stockport Interchange, green space on top of it. Chris Boardman is putting in fantastic cycling and walking infrastructure. The leader of Stockport Council calls it the newest, greenest, coolest, which causes a little bit of friction with neighbours Manchester, that Stockport is claiming to be the coolest borough in Greater Manchester. But they put it slightly differently. Elise Wilson says, Stockport's becoming Brooklyn to Manchester's New York. And the thing is, yeah, she does. Are you buying it? Yeah, people are buying that as well. Yeah, good. But the point is, if you live in Stockport, you know, the West Coast Main Line will deliver you into city centre Manchester within 8 minutes. And the council are saying city centre living in Stockport, but a fraction of the cost of city centre living. And it's working. It absolutely is working. And we think that can work more broadly across Greater Manchester. So Middleton is in my sights. Going north, you know, we want to do something about, we have our own north-south divide in Greater Manchester, being honest, and we need to do more for the north of Greater Manchester. And Middleton very much, with the Metrolink going out there, we want to see, you know, a mayoral development corporation there, which we think could have the same effect. And this is interesting because this starts to solve it starts to define levelling up. It starts to show how you can revitalise an English town, a proud town, and how you can link town and city together and both can prosper.
And interesting within the area that you cover, obviously, you know, Manchester sits at the heart of that, but there are a number of places that people would associate as being towns that sit under your jurisdiction as well, like Oldham, Bury, etc. And that seems to get lost a little bit in the narrative.
Yeah, sometimes we work hard, not... I get called the mayor of Manchester all the time, and I say, no, great, you know, I absolutely. But things are changing, actually, and this is that parochialism point. I'm going to come back to that, because I was the MP for Lee for 16 years, which is a Greater Manchester town, but I never got a letter from one of my former constituents that said anything other than Lee Lanks on the envelope, because I think there's a certain sort of demographic that writes to MPs, and they tend to be at the slightly older range, and the slightly older range would always say Lee Lanks, no question about it. But I think that memories of 1974 and all that is kind of going now. And now the identity that is common to all of the 10 boroughs increasingly is the Greater Manchester identity. Anybody under 50, I would say, is buying in to the Greater Manchester identity. And they like what it stands for. You know, when the terrible atrocity happened at the Manchester Arena, the B symbol, which was a Manchester symbol, but kind of came through everywhere, everyone, you know, the 10 boroughs, obviously very much together. The B started appearing all over Greater Manchester. There's one here, actually, which I've got one on. But, you know, everyone is kind of, you see it now in car stickers in Lee, which you'd honestly never have seen before. We're going to call our London-style integrated public transport system the B network. And there's been no pushback to that, you know, because I think people can see now that this is a powerful name, Manchester, but we're all benefiting from it in all of the boroughs as well. And I think people are buying into it. And the place does stand for something. Back to that time out point, it does stand for, yes, doing well in business, you know, getting on in life. For me, I always say Gary Neville is the absolute kind of perfect sort of symbol of Greater Manchester. Somebody who believes in, you know, doing well, you know, being successful in business, but never walking by on the other side, you know, always giving back. Marcus Rashford, absolutely the same. You know, we're lucky because the place, that's how it rolls and that's how it ticks. You know, it's always about the greater good. The B is about the greater good. No one's more important than anyone else. We're all bees, we're all working to the same end, which is improving the common good for everybody. And I think we're lucky that, you know, the place has got a definition, it's got values, and it's got an identity that people buy into, and that's why we're primed for success, I hope.
Marvellous. And you have had a number of high-profile interactions, I shall say, with national government over the last year and a half. So over your whole period, what have you learned about interacting with national government as being a Metro Mayor?
So I'm not going to make this about personality, so let me just leave that aside. What I have learned is that the powers that be in Whitehall and Westminster do not like the north of England having a stronger voice. They do not like it because they're used to it not having that, and they're used to just doing whatever they like and getting away with it. And they don't like being answered back by the north of England. But I've got news for them, it's changing. We've got a convention of the north in Liverpool next month. The north is getting organised. It's not going to accept any more the treatment that it's had for, I was going to say decades, I'll rephrase that, centuries. which has created a very unequal country. We are not going to accept it anymore. We are requiring change. And obviously there are many people in the Whitehall system particularly who do not like that. They don't think the North should be able to answer back in the way that it is. But obviously we're going to keep on doing it, not point scoring as they claimed, or grandstanding, which is that's how they try and undermine you now. If you say something now, that's the criticism. Oh, it's all point scoring. Well, no, it isn't actually, because I tried to resolve that dispute with the government in endless meetings behind closed doors. And I said to them, I will accept tier three restrictions, even though we had been under restrictions since July last year, which wasn't, they imposed those restrictions in July and seemingly forgot about the fact that they'd done it. And yet people in Greater Manchester were suffering all through last year under those restrictions. So when it came to October and they said, we're going to have to go further and put you in tier three, I said, okay, but with a full, fair furlough for the people in our pubs and betting shops who are about to see their work closed down. And the reason I said that was Bolton had their hospitality shut in September ahead of the tier three debate with zero compensation. They just shut it with nothing for those people. And I said, we're just not having that. We want an 80% furlough. We want the self-employed support scheme to be brought back for the taxi drivers and others who are going to lose all of the trade. It was a point of clear principle. We will accept it if you treat us fairly. And that wasn't resolved behind the scenes. It went all the way to the Prime Minister. It wasn't resolved, hence what happened. And honestly, I can say this honestly to you all. When I left Westminster, I kind of created a rule for myself, and I've stuck by it. And Kevin, the great Kevin Lee, who works for me, who also sticks by it, because we work as a partnership, as you know. If the government gets it right and does the right thing by us, we will say so. And I can point back to times in the last 3 years where I have done that, where I have praised the government and I've praised ministers. If they do the wrong thing by us, then I will also say so, and I will say so using all of my political experience and everything that I can do now to get Greater Manchester heard. And that is what happened last year. When they treated us in that way, that is what I did. And it was actually so frustrating that a couple of days after that debate, they were going to put London in tier two. It was literally a matter of days later. And immediately, the offer of support for tier two was on the table. Yet we've been in tier two effectively since the summer. And I think we can't just leave last year and say, oh, well, that was then and forget about it. I'm not going to rerun it when they come to the conference. I want to make a positive offer to the government about a levelling up deal for Greater Manchester. But you do have to see what was laid bare there. You had a country in the pandemic where the North had higher cases, higher deaths because of the deprivation, because of people in jobs where they couldn't stop working, even if they were unwell or asked to isolate because of the insecurity of their work. That was why we had this higher case rate. And then you had a Westminster Whitehall operation that had no real understanding of how much people were suffering. And that is what brought that to a head. And that has to be understood now. And the powers that be down there are going to have to get used to the North of England answering back a bit more. And when we say it's not right, you're treating us as second class, being challenged and being made to change it. And that is, I hope, one of the changes that comes out of this pandemic.
And I think it was certainly very interesting as well to see the platform that that you had as Metro Mayor to be able to communicate some of that as well. And that if we were to have a pandemic that had run, say, in 2006, I don't feel like there would have been that pushback in the same way from the North of England. Was that something you would agree with?
Yeah, and I wasn't doing it alone. So for those of you who live in the Northwest or know it, you'll know that Steve Rotherham and I will appear fairly regularly alongside each other. And I think it's fair to say that our media, the television, Granada reports, they like that the two cities actually will come together and city regions and will side by side say, we're working together. And that amplifies the voice, doesn't it? And now we're working with Tracy. We're going over other side of them there hills, and we're kind of even extending the hand of friendship there. But seriously, we are, if you do that, I've noticed how people in our part of the world really respond to it. Because it gives a voice that's never really been there, actually, for the North. And we've just got to keep building it. We've got to keep working on it, building it. As much as we can, keep it positive. Frame it as positive offers to the government. And that's this levelling up deal that we're going to call for next week. We will build a London-style public transport system by 2024 with London-level fares. We will remove 1 million tonnes of carbon from the Greater Manchester economy. We will retrofit over 12,000 domestic properties. We will regenerate Stockport and give you an example. Yeah. So I'm giving the government the outputs, and then I'm saying to them, you hold me to account then. If you sign this deal with us, you can then say, right, we've backed Andy Burnham in Greater Manchester with the money and the powers to do something that he says is levelling up. So he said what he thinks will level up Greater Manchester. We've backed him, and then we will hold him to account for delivering it. And I think the politics of that works for the government. Because if I don't do what I'm saying, and I'm all full of bluster, as they would probably think, then they can call that out and they can say, well, look, he said all of this and it isn't happening. And, you know, so therefore, they can hold me to account. If it does start to happen and yellow and black buses with bees on them start appearing, and the north of England will have a very visible sign of levelling up at its heart, won't it? A London-style public transport system in the heart of the north. And they'll be able to say, look, we backed this, we made this happen, not the mayor. And therefore, the politics works for them both ways.
Good. Sounds like you've actually got a definition for levelling up, which I'm still confused as to what the government thinks levelling up.
Stick on transport. Let's get cut to the chase here. London level fares. That, if levelling up was that, that would be game changing. So actually, just let's not go off on like these like, you know, missions to try and find levelling. Just do that. Give everywhere in England London level fares. That will be a stride towards levelling the place up.
Yeah. Yeah, marvellous. A final question from me, and then we'll move to the audience. Do get your questions ready. So Keir Starmer set out his vision very recently, and I did the cheeky thing of doing Control F and searching for mayors and devolution through that 14,000-word essay, and it didn't return any results on that. Should we read anything into that?
No, I don't think so. I think he was talking about structures, was it? It was more an essay about beliefs. And no, so I wouldn't. I think we've got growing support from the leadership, but I don't think it's yet fully there. So, you know, you look at that debate about the Electoral College, no one's talking about, oh, now we've got mayors and they have to have a, you know, we're not recognised in the party structure still. We're kind of a blind spot, it's fair to say, when it comes to, you know, the way the party's run. And I think that's what we're saying needs to change. Labour needs to sort of stop this slightly unsure, oh, Osborne created it, and we're not. No, that needs to go. Embrace this thing, you know, energise it. As I say, you can build a different type of politics, this place-first politics, actually then build stronger support for the party. You could see that in our election results, not just mine, but in the local results as well. I think people will come back to you when you're talking about place rather than just making party points all the time. And I think, you know, I keep saying, you know, I think English devolution is the life raft for Labour in the north of England that it needs to jump on and really sort of, well, I'm stretching metaphors. How can you build on a life raft? I think that'll be a bit of a challenge, wouldn't it? But you see the point I'm making.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter, at Centre4Cities, or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.